Welcome day two of our wonderful workshop on QFT for mathematicians. Our first talk of the day is being given by Justin Hilburn about 3D and 4DA models. Just as a reminder, if you have a question, please raise your hand and I'll give you the microphone. If there's anyone on Zoom with a question, just hit the raise hand button and I'll try to call on you. And I think that's all I have to say. Take it away, Justin.
Okay. So yeah, so this this series of lectures, it's going to be about A and B models in three and four dimensions. And today I'm pretty much only going to talk about the B model. But first, really, like what I'm going to want to do for this series of lectures, our goal is to figure out how to use the BV formalism and the naive geometric quantization ansatz that we've been talking about this whole conference. Basically just understand the B model today in dimensions 3 and 4. And what I want to do is I want to actually go back and revisit a bunch of the things that Phil talked about in slightly more detail. He was sort of forced to go extremely fast, and I'm going to need a few of the details that he glossed over in my talks. So I want to go ahead and assume that I have an n plus 1 dimensional AKSZ theory. So let me remind you that is some sort of theory of the form maps from sigma to x, where x, where x is something that's n-shifted symplectic, this sigma is going to vary as I look at different things in my field theory. This thing is going to be some sort of a D-oriented space. And usually, like the kind of thing that it's going to be constructed in some way from like an oriented manifold by applying some kind of functor, like the Drom stack or the Dolbeau stack or the Betty stack. And so the two examples that I have in mind, and maybe I'll just put them on this board since they'll be around the entire time. So the two examples that I want to talk about, or maybe I'll talk about three examples. So the first one is just the ordinary 2D B model. And Phil told you that is the theory given by the mapping space from M Betty to T star 1 of Y. So this is a two-dimensional field theory because this is one-shifted symplectic, and this M here is going to range over manifolds and manifolds with boundary of dimension less than or equal to 2, then there'll be the 3D B model, and that's going to look almost exactly the same, except for now I'm going to look I'm going to have target being a two-shifted symplectic space. Or more generally, I'm going to allow any holomorphic symplectic manifold. So all the symplectic things that we're talking about are algebraic symplectic, but or holomorphic symplectic, but I just want to call it out. And actually I can do any stack X. But if I, in this case, the algebraic symplectic manifold that I'm thinking of is T star Y, and in order to make the theory Z graded instead of Z2 graded, I had to do something funny and shift the degrees. Oh, sorry, symplectic. Thank you. So like in this example, I'm thinking of T star Y, but in this case, I can regrade it in order to make this B minus one shifted symplectic. If I just had some random holomorphic symplectic stack, there's not going to be an obvious way to upgrade it to a two-shifted symplectic stack. I mean, maybe one way that you can do it is if you have a C star action such that the weight of the symplectic form under that action is 2, then you can make the theory Z-graded. But if this thing is not around, like the best you can do is you can just hope that this is like a Z mod 2 Z graded in general. Basically, what's just going to happen is that if you put a zero shifted symplectic thing here and then a three shifted symplectic thing here by the theorem that Phil quoted the other day, this thing will be minus 3 shifted symplectic instead of minus 1 shifted symplectic. So you need to rejigger things in some way. And this is going to have like a consequence that like when I relate like the 2D B model and the 3D B model, like everything is going to be off by a shift. So you'll see something like a T star minus 1 here instead of a 1. Anyway, that's one subtlety that'll just show up a lot. And then the other one is the 4D B model. And this is maps from M Betty into T star 3 of BG. And so this appears as a twist of 4D n equals 4 in like the Kapustin and Witten paper on geometric Langlands. Okay. And then this one is also known as Rozansky-Witten theory, and this is going to be the subject of all of Lev's talks. Okay, so these are going to be the three example field theories that I want to talk about. Okay. But before we analyze them, I want to just like go back and just think a little bit more about like how does one get a TQFT out of this sort of structure. All right, and actually, I'd like to say like one word actually about the proof that Phil gave that this mapping stack is D minus N, or sorry, is N minus D shifted symplectic. Just because I'm going to use some of these ideas later, and it's useful to look at if you've never seen it before. Okay, so let me just remind you of like the proof of that theorem, or if you've never seen it, I'll tell you for the first time. So the first bit of it is I need to actually give you the definition of what it means to be deoriented. And so So sigma is deoriented if it's what's called sigma. So the first thing is that it's sigma compact. Equipped uh, with a non-degenerate orientation. Deorientation, which is going to be some sort of a map from functions on sigma to the complex numbers, but living in degree D. Okay, so now I haven't told you what the words sigma compact means, and I haven't told you what the words non-degenerate mean. So sigma is, O compact. I think I've been saying the wrong thing. The first thing is that the structure sheaf inside of QCO of sigma is perfect. So that means that it's a finite complex of projectives. And for any other perfect complex, E, the global sections of X with coefficients in E is a perfect C module vector space. So in this case, it just means our complex of vector spaces. So this is just, this is just a finiteness condition. But the upside of why you want this is that this thing implies that you have a natural map from the space of closed two forms on sigma times y for any space y to the space of closed two forms. To the space of functions on sigma, tensored with the space of closed two forms on y. So that's what this buys you. Let me call this orientation the fundamental class of sigma. And now using this guy, this thing gives me now a map to the closed two forms on y of degree 2 minus d. So basically this is coming from the fact that I contract this thing away and I get a complex supported in degree, it shifts things by minus d. And so this thing shifts these two forms. And this map you can call the integration. And the big point of all of this derived symplectic geometry business is that being a closed two form in this scenario is actually like an extra piece of data, not a property. And because it's actually a piece of data, you can integrate that piece of data to get a closed two form just on y. So usually like when you try, what we're gonna do is we're gonna use this to construct a symplectic form in a second. So if I have like a form, so in the case that y is a mapping stack, that you can make a symplectic form, you can make a closed form by taking the evaluation map from sigma times maps from sigma to x, and then pulling back the symplectic form on x, and then using this orientation to integrate. And so that tells you that you'll get a symplectic form on the mapping space of degree 2 minus d. So this is like the construction that like actually produces for you the minus D, or at least the closed form that underlies the shifted symplectic structure. And then now the question is, why is this non-degenerate? Like, why is it a symplectic form and not just a random closed two form? Yes?
Pardon?
What is an example of a sigma that is all compact and one so, that is not?
So Phil gave you a ton yesterday, but my favorite one is if you have a closed oriented manifold, then that is of dimension D, then that's D oriented. And then in that case, this is actually, I'm going to like actually work out this example in a second, but this will be just the chains on your space, and this will be the honest fundamental class, which you can use to, you know, pair a chain with the cap the chain with the fundamental class to get a number. So that's the main example.
Sorry, I'm still struggling a little bit with the definition of O-compact. So it says that, so I have a given sheaf, and then for every other sheaf, sections of that other sheaf forms a perfect complex of complex.
Yeah, so the first thing is that like the structure sheaf of sigma, sorry, so this is a particular sheaf, right? Every single space has a structure sheaf.
Mm-hmm.
And like you want that to actually be a... like a compact object, which like isn't always true. And then also, if you have any other space which is a perfect object on sigma, then you want it to be a perfect, its global section to be a perfect vector space.
So that's also on sigma. Yeah.
So this thing was on sigma, but this will now just be a vector space.
Gamma of...
Oh, sorry, sigma. Sorry, sigma. Yeah, sorry. Sigma, yes.
But at the other places, like, for example, later you use x. Okay, good. Yeah, there it's actually an x.
So here I did sigma. There I just used sigma.
Yeah, this makes sense, I think.
No, it's omega sub x. The evaluation... So in this case, I'm assuming that my y was the mapping space. And then I have a map from y times sigma to y, y times sigma to x, I mean, which is the evaluation map. And I can pull back the symplectic form on x. So this I really did mean in x.
I think there's still an integral over m or something at the other place.
It's right there. There's the integral over
m. No, the other one, like the other integral before. There's integral over
m. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks. I changed my notation on the fly and it... caught me. Right. Okay. So this form here, right, is now on sigma times this mapping space.
I just talked. All right. Can I have one more question?
And then now I integrate it, and now it's just on the mapping space. Yeah.
Sorry. So like sigma is like a three manifold. So just
sigma can be anything.
But, yeah.
Okay.
So sigma being perfect is like co-chains on the manifold or a finite dimensional complex of C vector spaces?
It's the constant sheaf, yeah.
Yeah, okay, great, thanks.
Yeah. Sorry. Let me get a new piece of chalk. Sorry, this is taking a tiny bit longer than I intended. All right, and then so this definition of the non-degenerate is basically exactly of the orientation being non-degenerate is exactly designed to make omega a non-degenerate two form. And so that, so this sigma, so the definition, sigma is non-degenerate if the pairing, so for any E in perfect complexes on sigma, you have a natural pairing if for every perfect complex E, this canonical pairing you can write down is non-degenerate. And I'm not going to do the proof here, but basically what this is exactly designed, what this condition is exactly designed to do is to allow you to prove that this is really a non-degenerate two-form and not just an arbitrary closed two-form. Okay, so the reason that like I did this is I'm going to use this integration map over and over and over again. And so I just wanted to introduce it now. Okay, and so our goal in all of these situations is going to be to use this to try and construct a TQFT. And what is that? So one has an N category of cobordisms, which is symmetric monoidal under disjoint union. And one has also, sorry, I guess that's an N plus one category. One also has an N plus one category of N of C linear N categories, which is monoidal under the C tensor product over C. And a TQFT is supposed to be a symmetric monoidal functor. And so what kind of thing are we trying to do? So a cobordism is just a pair of compact, or just a D-manifold with boundary being two compact D minus and one manifolds. So these are D minus one compact oriented. And this is a D dimensional compact with boundary. No, D is allowed to be arbitrary.
In the previous line, you have N cob.
Yeah, that's fine. It's like an N category. So like, it has its objects are zero manifolds. Its morphisms are cobordisms between zero manifolds. It has morphisms between morphisms, which are one manifolds and higher. So I guess like what I should have actually said is that this thing can actually have corners and this thing actually can have like higher corners. So this thing, so like a typical object here is something like a point or something like this. Suppose I have two of these, like a typical morphism, a typical two morphism would be something like this. So this thing would be like a two morphism in N cob for any n greater than two. So basically, like I'm allowing, lots of things. Maybe this is not as familiar as I assumed it was.
Is this n category structure canonically associated to the this D bordism category, or is some extra data you put on it?
So I mean, they need to have like colors and so forth. Is that what you mean, or what do you mean?
Oh, I'm asking a very basic question. Like now we are considering this d-dimensional bordism category,
or n-dimensional.
Right. So now you have this n category. So this structure of n category, is this some extra data you put on it?
Asking whether there's like one TQFT or there are many TQFTs and you have to make some choices to construct. So the functors are the TQFTs. This is the domain for every oriented TQFT.
Okay, we're
hoping
different ones, and making one hypothetical choice.
So we want to build a Z. And its domain is going to be here. And this is the same for every oriented TQFT. Like, and this is the same for every oriented TQFT. All the data of the TQFT is the functor. Huh. Is that what you were trying to ask? I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
All right. And so the thing that we want to do is, let me actually assume that I was in the case where this thing was like a morphism between the empty set and the empty set. So that's actually a manifold without boundary. So these two both don't have boundary and this one does. Then the kind of thing that I would get is, I would get n minus d categories, zm in, zm out, and a functor given by n. So like, for example, like if I had like a pair of pants, so zn would be like two circles, z out would be something like this. So this would be, an n minus d category, this, or sorry, an n minus one category, this would be an n minus one category, and this would be a functor between them. So this is a n minus one cat, or an n minus d cat in general. In my picture, it was one. This is an n minus d cat. And then I want to get this functor. And then this led to the onsots that Phil talked about the other day, which was that we want a procedure that associates an n minus d category to the equations of motion of your theory on a D manifold. So like, and remember Phil's notation is when you have one of these AKSZ theories, this particular symplectic space is the thing he called equations of motion on M. So this is like what kind of leads to like that onsots, but there's actually like more. So like we actually like also will want to somehow get functors and lots of like other pieces of data out of it. Just trying to construct a category is not actually enough. Okay, so let me very quickly enhance the enhance what we're asking for from the onsots.
Can I ask in this situation, what is n?
What is n?
Yeah.
So n depended on the, so when you have an AKSZ theory, it depended on what n shifted symplectic you had here. So it matches also the, it's like off by one from the dimension of the TQFT. N is the target. Yeah. The smaller that D is, sorry, you're not allowed in these situations. So like the dimension of M to go above one plus the dimension of one plus the dimension of the target. Like that was part of like what Phil was to... No, M Betty is exactly the dimension of M. Is the what do you, I don't understand. So here M is allowed to be a one manifold or a two manifold or a point. And this thing is and that's what it means to be a 2D TQFT. This is allowed to be a three manifold, a two manifold, or a one manifold. Oh, the dimension of y doesn't mean anything. I'm just talking, the n here is the shift. Like, that's not the, like, the shift of the symplectic form has nothing to do with the dimension of y. I'm sorry. So, like, maybe, like, I am often very bad at connecting, like, the words that I mean to say to what comes out of my mouth. So I could have meant to say shift, shift, shift. And I probably did say dimension just because that's the kind of thing that I would do. So I apologize for confusing. Yeah, so it's the shift. Yeah, all right. And I don't promise that there's not an off by one error there. But you can fix it by check, but we'll fix it when we look at the examples. All right. Okay, but we want to, like, enhance this thing. And so I don't just want a procedure that gives me categories to symplectic spaces. I also need to do something about these cobordisms. And so we're going to need to get these cobordisms into shifted symplectic geometry somehow. And so the idea is that the equations of motion you can think of as being a functor from the n category of cobordisms to another n category, which is n-shifted Lagrangian correspondences. Both of these things are monoidal under disjoint union, and this will be a disjoint union functor. And it's like quite, the one part of it is like obvious. It's obvious what this thing does on, or it will be clear what this thing does to objects and morphisms. So if I have a cobordism like this, well, if I apply the equations of motion, that's just some kind of a mapping space construction. So it's contravariant. So if I look at my equations of motion on M, I can restrict them to get equations of motion on M in and M out. So this is just clear because it's a mapping space and you can pre-compose with these inclusions. And then the thing that's not obvious is that this is a Lagrangian correspondence. So the theorem that, like, this thing is actually a Lagrangian correspondence is due to Kolok, Schiembauer, and they added somebody, Hogsang in the latest version. Okay, so the theorem that this thing, like, actually, like, upgrades to Lagrangian correspondences is due to them, and I want to explain something about what that means. Like, what is a Lagrangian? Like, why do I know that these things are Lagrangian correspondences? Etc. So I need to just define a few basic concepts. Okay, so the first thing is that I want to upgrade my equations of motion to go to this category of Lagrangian correspondences, and then I want to upgrade my geometric quantization onsets to go to n categories with the tensor product. So we're going to factor this thing that I wanted to construct, like, through this n category of Lagrangian correspondences. Does that make sense? And so then the next question will be, so once we've finished with this arrow, then the next question is, like, what's that arrow? Where is the eraser? Yeah, and keep interrupting. All the interruptions, all of the questions have been very good. All right. Okay, so our first question is, so let me explain like the key definitions and constructions that go into this theorem. Basically, this is just teaching you a little bit of this n-shifted symplectic geometry. So the first thing is going to be what is a Lagrangian? And before I describe what is a Lagrangian, I should describe what does it mean for something to be isotropic. So an n-shifted isotropic structure is going to be on a morphism L into an n-shifted symplectic manifold. That's just going to be a path in the space of closed two forms of dimension n between the pullback of the symplectic form omega on X and the origin. So this is just n zero. So this is just an enhancement of like the normal way that you define isotropic is that you ask that the pullback of the symplectic form be zero, but now that's data and it's not just a property. So in particular, like this is some space, some topological space, and you need to actually give me a path. And then the next thing that we're going to need is that this thing actually be non-degenerate. And the way that that works is that you get from this, you get a factorization. This is just very much like what you get in like ordinary symplectic geometry. So you have the tangent complex of the space L. So remember, these things are all like derived schemes or stacks. So their tangent complexes are actually like their tangent spaces are chain complexes. So this is the tangent chain complex. And normally you have a map DF, which goes to F star of the pullback or the pullback of the tangent complex of X. And one thing that you get from the symplectic form
could you repeat the question?
Here the path is on L or on X?
This path?
Yeah.
This path is on, oh, sorry, that should be an L. Thank you very much. That was very helpful. Thank you. You're my new best friend for today, since you're catching all the mistakes that I would have transmitted to other people. So thank you. So this thing then, using the symplectic form, or the pullback of the symplectic form, this thing will map to the cotangent complex. So if you've never seen this, people use L for cotangent. And then there's a dual of this map, which takes you to the cotangent complex for L. But because this thing was not just an ordinary symplectic form, it had degree n, this thing is going to be off by n, by a shift. Because it's not a map of degrees, it's not a map of degree zero, it's a map of degree n, because of the cohomological degree. So inside of here, you have zero, and you can take the fiber product of these two things. And this thing gives you a space, which I'll call the perpendicular inside of this pullback tangent complex using the form omega. So this is just the... But what you should think of is that this thing is a path between the image here and zero. Like that's what the objects of this space are. So everything is kind of getting upgraded in a homotopical way. And because I know that F star of omega is zero, I can actually have one of those for everything that comes from T of L. I can use this path to give me a path between the image here and zero And so that gives me a factorization here. And so definition, L is Lagrangian if this map is an isomorphism. Okay, so that's like just a slightly fancier version of the definition of Lagrangian that you knew already. The only thing that was different is that here there was a shift, and then I couldn't just say that things were equal to zero. I just had to put in a path, like an explicit choice of path. Okay, so let me just give you a ton of examples of things that are conormals. So I've not, or sorry, that are Lagrangian. I haven't managed to show that this is a Lagrangian yet, but I will soon. But basically, all the things that you know and love from ordinary symplectic geometry, there will just be an n-shifted version of them. And I won't prove that any of these things are actually Lagrangian, but I'll just tell you. So basically, one example would be if you have any map from Z to W, there is an n-shifted conormal of Z inside of W. And this thing is a Lagrangian inside of the n-shifted cotangent bundle. So this thing shouldn't really surprise you. So there's an n-shifted version of that. Another one is that if you have alpha is a closed one form on x of degree n, then the graph of alpha is a Lagrangian inside of the n-shifted cotangent bundle. I guess I shouldn't use x here because I'm using that for a symplectic space. Let me just call that w in the cotangent bundle of w. So this just generalizes the fact that you already knew that, like, if you have a closed one form, then like that, then the graph of that is a Lagrangian in the ordinary cotangent bundle. All I did was put n-shifted on everything and it all stayed the same. So that one's kind of boring. One that's a little bit more cool is that if x is n-shifted, symplectic, the point is actually n shifted symplectic for every n. In particular, it's n plus 1 shifted symplectic. And a cool fact is that basically the n shifted symplectic structure on x is exactly the same as the Lagrangian structure on the map from this canonical map from x to a point viewed as an n plus 1 dimensional, an n plus 1 shifted symplectic space. So that one's kind of a little bit weird. I'll use it later. And then one that will become very handy for us. So if you only remember two things from this list of examples, remember the conormal bundle, and then remember that if I have a Lagrangian L inside of X, then maps from L, or sorry, from sigma to L, and maps from inside of maps from sigma to X. So like if this map is I, you have a map that's given by postcomposition, this thing is Lagrangian. Whenever this thing is, you know, deoriented. So this is actually like kind of something that's like not so easy to prove. Or even the zero shifted version of this is like not that easy to prove when you're just doing ordinary symplectic geometry. The reason being is that you can, it's very difficult to like show first that the form here that you got by integrating was closed, and then that you actually like that this pullback will actually be Lagrangian. So this fact that the closeness is like a data is data really like makes is really quite powerful even in these boring cases. Okay, so that was one list of things that I wanted to do is, so I needed to tell you what a Lagrangian was. The second thing, and then a Lagrangian correspondence is just by definition. And I'm just gonna drop the n-shifts. You just put an n on everything. Just like normal, this is just a Lagrangian inside of if you have two symplectic manifolds, X and Y, then you can reverse the symplectic form on X and take their product and look for Lagrangians in this product. And that is like the definition of that's the ordinary definition of a Lagrangian correspondence. And it's the same, like in the unshifted world, you just put an N on everything. Okay, and so then now, the next major theorem that you need to know is that like composition of Lagrangian correspondences stays Lagrangian. So I'm not going to prove this, but I will just mention like one special case. So this is what you needed to know, that that N category of Lagrangian correspondences that I talked about really was an N category. Like you needed to know you could compose. But one example is that, you know, a Lagrangian correspondence in a point times Y is just the same thing as the Lagrangians in Y. So in particular, this tells you something about that the intersection of two Lagrangians So if you have two different Lagrangians in X, you can turn them into Lagrangian correspondences like this. And then the composition is just given by intersecting. So that's just L1 times L2 over X. And this thing will just be a Lagrangian correspondence from a point to a point. And so that thing will be, sorry, I've just used multiple ways of writing a point. So that thing will just be a Lagrangian correspondence in a point with its n-shifted symplectic structure. So that thing tells you that this thing is actually an n-1 shifted symplectic manifold. So we're going to use this a ton. So this is going to turn out to be an extremely important theorem. Maybe since I've just been doing generalities, maybe let me just use it in some way. So I'll take a break from the path I was on and maybe use this thing to like learn something about field theory, since I've just been doing very boring stuff for a long time.
Justin, in your third example of X and a point, uh-huh. Is the symplectic structure on X used somewhere?
Yeah, it was used when to compute the Lagrangian structure on that map. So right, like when L1 and L2 are just Lagrangians in X. So basically, the data that I gave on a Lagrangian was a homotopy from 0 to the pullback of the symplectic form on X, like for each of these things. And that, so that like involved the symplectic structure on X in some way. And then now I compose the path for L1 with the inverse path for L2, and I get a loop on 0. And it turns out that the key fact on this is that if you take the base loop space at 0 on the space of closed two forms of dimension n, or sorry, of shift n, then that's the space of closed two forms of shift n minus 1. I don't want to use x here just because I don't want to think it's the same x that I used here. And then the point is that like in these thing, like in these two Lagrangian structures, so when I'm on this this fiber product, I had, you know, I could pull back the symplectic form on X, and then I had a path to 0 through my first, let's call these maps like F1 and F2. So I have one for F1, and then also I have a path like this for F2. And then if I pull these things back further along the inclusion of the intersection, so I also have inclusions of the intersection into both L1 and L2, so I can pull back even further. Let me just call, so this thing, if I pull back further to the intersection, I get a path from 0 to the full pullback of W and then 1 to 0, where this I is the map to x, which factors through both f1 and f2.
Sorry, I meant in your third bullet point. You have x n shifted symplectic, and point is n plus 1 shifted, right by your left hand.
Oh, this? Sorry. Well, let me just finish doing this proof since I started it.
Sorry.
So anyway, so now I have a loop here, and that thing is a loop in closed two forms on L1 times L2 over x. So that thing is an n minus 1 shifted two form, like on the intersection. So that loop, this loop here, like is the symplectic, so the symplectic form that I claim to exist. And you claim that here, did I use the symplectic form to produce this Lagrangian structure?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. They're basically end up being just like tautologically the same data. Basically, D of this two form is zero, and the symplectic form here was zero. So I pulled back zero, and I needed something such that, I needed something that D of it was zero, and that's like what the two form was here. So sorry, yeah, that was unclear. Okay, so let's like use this to like learn something since I've just spent tons of time doing crazy things. So let's assume that I'm in this 3D B model example. So if I have a map, so again, now X is something that's not related to any other X that's ever appeared. So I'm looking at the 3D B model, and I have a map from X to Y. So we've said that one Lagrangian that I could get out of this, actually, sorry, let me have two different maps from X1 to Y. So I have two different two shifted conormal bundles inside of T star 2 of Y. And by this AKSZ stuff, if I have any two manifold and I take its Betty stack, so this is just the dimension. By the AKSZ construction, I know that actually I also have Lagrangian's maps are given by post-composition with my maps F1 and F2. That should have been a Y. This should be XI, or so that should be Y. Okay, so I think that makes sense. Is that true?
I think the X1 in the second line is a Y, or up.
No, isn't that an X?
All the way to the top.
Here. Oh, sorry, that should be a Y. Thank you. You guys are lifesavers. All right, so I have these conormals in Y. And then I said that like an upgrade of the theorem that Phil told us about tells me that now this is a Lagrangian in the mapping space. And I have two of them. We'll call them L1 and L2, basically for my X1 and X2. Let me say that I had two of those. Okay, and so now the theorem that I said is that this thing is going to be minus 1 shifted symplectic. So that means it's going to be a field theory. And it turns out that that you can do the intersection just totally in the target. And so this thing actually ends up being mapped from M2B into T star 1 of X1 intersect X2 inside of Y. Okay, and so now let's try and learn, like, what did this thing tell me about field theory? Maybe let me slightly abuse. So if I put on a contractible space and take the Betty stack, that did nothing. Like that was a null op that I just did. And I should think of these things as like coming in on like as being looking at maps from this three manifold that go to xi at zero, x1 at zero, and they go to x2 at one. Like that's basically what these two, like that's what this like intersection would be. And so like what this thing is telling you is that if I take my Rozansky-Witten theory and I put it on a two manifold times an interval, and I ask that on either side of the interval, I either map entirely to the conormal to x1 or the conormal to x2, like on the left side and the right side, that gives me this intersection space. And this is like the equations of motion for that theory. And this thing is just an ordinary B model whose target is the intersection of x1 and x2. So what we've learned from this sort of thing is that like if I take this 3D B model and I put it on a sandwich target T star Y, and I put it on a two manifold times an interval, and on the two manifolds, I ask for it to go to x1, or the conormal to x1 and the conormal to x2. Then and then I like let the size of this interval go to zero to like shrink things down, that the thing I'm getting is just this 2D B model to x1 times x2 over y. All right. And yeah, and I guess it's just terminological that here when I talk about the 2D B model, I call y the target. For some reason, they call y the target, not this T star one of y the target. When people, you know, talk about like looking at the B model on a Calabi-Yau or whatever, they mean say take T star one of it and then put it in here. Okay, so this was like some random thing that we learned, is that using like these like facts about shifted symplectic geometry, I showed that this intersection had a minus one shifted symplectic structure, which made it a field theory. And then we looked at our list and we found out what field theory is it. And so this told me something about the relationship between Rozansky-Witten theory and the B model. So this is like one way that you can use all this nonsense that I've been telling you about. Okay, so any questions about this? Example. Anyway, this is something that like physicists would just be like, oh, I could know that in like 2 seconds, but this is the way that a mathematician would know it in 2 seconds. Okay, so now let me remind you where I was on my path of things that I was going to tell you, that I was trying to tell you about. So that was just a digression so that you would have at least one small application.
Justin, can I ask, is there any version of this calculation where you don't assume that your Lagrangians are conormals, maps to conormals?
Sure. So one thing that you can do is if I didn't take the Z2 graded version. So there's a different analog of this where I mentioned that like that it's hard that this Rozansky-Witten 3D B model like is not always Z graded. And so sometimes I might just want to forget the Z grading and just look at like T star Y. So now that gives me more options for Lagrangians. So now an option for a Lagrangian that I would have would be like DW, or the graph of DW, where DW is a function. I can have like two holomorphic functions, W1 and W2 on Y, and I could look at the graph of their differentials. And so now if I do the same sort of thing, what I would find is a B model whose target is the intersection of these two things. Where this thing is minus one shifted symplectic. And I mentioned before that when I try, if I take the ungraded version of the 3DB model, it's going to be related to an ungraded version of the 2DB model. So really, like, what you should think of is that, like, basically I should collapse the Z grading to a Z2 grading, so then minus one is one. And then this would be the would be like the theory you would get. And later on, we'll show that, like, when you geometrically quantize this sort of thing, I mean, it's more of an ansatz, but based on, like, what Kapustin, Rozanski, and Salina did, what we'll find is this is going to be matrix factorization on Y with this potential W1 minus 2. And then you notice that this category is not Z graded, it's only Z2 graded. So that's kind of the end. That's why, like, the you end up seeing Z2 graded things, like when you do the B model. So this is the analog of something Lev, I'm sure, will do in 30 minutes or. Okay. All right. So let me just tell you finally one more. One last piece of shifted symplectic geometry, and then I can stop. okay. So the last piece of shifted symplectic geometry that I'm going to need is what's called a boundary structure. And the reason I've been telling you all these things is that later on, when I give, or like when I talk next time, I'm just going to want to be like building Lagrangians and doing intersections just nonstop with no pause to explain like why things are Lagrangians or why various intersections are what I say they are. So I'm putting all of the, just the formalism up front, which may have been a bad choice. But it's the one I made. Okay, so the last thing that I want to explain are what are called boundary structures and relative D orientations. So the example that I want to have in mind, or so the thing that I wanted to try and show is that that this equations of motion upgraded to a functor from cobordisms to Lagrangian correspondences. So in particular, like the thing I need to show is that if I have like the boundary of a manifold of like, if I have like a D minus one manifold, including into a D manifold as its boundary, and say this one is, you know, compact and oriented, then the thing that like we want to show, or one thing that it would be necessary to know, like if this functor that I claimed exists, is that you would need to know that the equations of motion for M, restricting to the equations of motion on the boundary of M, the thing that we would need to know is that this map is Lagrangian. Right, because this is like a cobordism between the boundary, between the boundary of M and the empty set, which is really just the same in this thing as a Lagrangian correspondence between this guy and a point. So, but anyway, so this is like part of like what I was claiming existed in this Kolok, Schienbauer, Hogsang package. Yes? So I want to explain what the thing is that you need to know, or that lets you prove this. And the thing you need is what's called a boundary structure. So let's say now that I have an inclusion of two stacks, gamma and sigma. And let me assume that gamma is D-oriented. So in your example, so this thing has an orientation. So in the example, gamma is the boundary, and sigma is the whole space. Okay, so definition, a boundary structure on X, on F, is a homotopy between F star of gamma and the origin and zero as maps from functions on sigma of sigma to C of SD. So basically you can take the restriction map to get to here and then use gamma, and that's this F star. This is this thing F star of gamma, which is going to be a function from, sorry, which is going to be a functional on functions on sigma. Okay, so that's the definition. And so what do you immediately get out of having such a thing? Well, this thing tells you that then the map where you integrate, oh, sorry, and let me just assume that these things are both O-compact. So I have integration maps like in both settings. So what this thing tells you is that this integration map where I use F star of gamma to integrate things on sigma, that thing is homotopic to the zero map. Like that's basically what I'm going to get out of this. And then now I'm going to be able to prove for you that that this thing is actually Lagrangian. Or sorry, that the induced map on restriction on mapping spaces will be induct. All right. So I've got this diagram here. So I can look at sigma times maps, or sorry, gamma times maps from sigma times x goes to gamma times maps from gamma to x, where this is just the identity map times the restriction map along f. And then this, I can apply f or the identity map. That thing will get me here. And then I have the evaluation map on gamma, which takes me to x. And I have the evaluation map on sigma, which also takes me to x. Okay, and so what do I, so I want to show that I have a homotopy between the symplectic form on the mapping space. So you guys remember, how do I, and if I pull it back along the restriction, I want to show that that thing is homotopic to zero. But I told you now the formula for the mapping, for the symplectic form on the mapping space. That I got by pulling back along the evaluation of gamma, the symplectic form on x, and then integrating it along gamma. So I want to show that I have a homotopy like that.
Should those gammas be sigmas?
No. So basically, like what I want to show is that when I take the symplectic form here and pull it back along the restriction map, just on maps, then when I take the symplectic form on maps from gamma to x and restrict it to maps from sigma to x, that I get zero. So this whole expression here, this is the symplectic form on maps from x. This was my construction of the symplectic form on maps from gamma to x. And right, if I'm trying to produce a Lagrangian structure, then I need to show that when I pull the symplectic form back along the restriction map, it's homotopic to zero. Whew. All right. So how am I going to do this? Well, the point is that you can show that this thing is the same thing as the integration along gamma of ID times restriction star of Eve gamma star of omega x, basically using the commutativity or the commutativity of this diagram. And then you use it now the other direction to show that this thing now is going to be the same as integrating using f star of gamma of the evaluation with respect to sigma of the form, but then I know that that's homotopic to zero by this. So basically, like here, it's a little bit tricky. So basically, I rewrote things in terms of an integral here, but then I could push forward. If I want to integrate out gamma, I could first push down to sigma. If I want to integrate out with gamma, you know, using its fundamental class, I could first push everything forward to here and then integrate out using the push forward orientation. But that's the same thing as just pulling back to, like by the commutativity of this diagram, it's the same as pulling back and then just integrating. So we did it. But what we've actually only shown so far is we've shown that this thing is isotropic. We've not shown that it's not that it's actually a Lagrangian. Okay, but it's terrible to show that it's a Lagrangian. So I'm just going to say there is a non-degeneracy condition, a notion of a non-degenerate. And you can look it up in Kluck's paper, boundary structure. And that's what's called a relative deorientation. So basically, if you remember the way that I defined like a non-degenerate oriented, like a, you know, I defined also an orientation in two parts. Like part of it was that you needed to have a fundamental class, and then I asked for some pairings to be non-degenerate. And so here they're similar. Using this fundamental class, I can construct some pairings and ask for them to be non-degenerate. But if I write them down, it's going to take me all the rest of my time, and so I'm not going to do it. But if you want to see like what this definition is, look at a paper of Kluck on, I think it's called like, I forget, it's called like boundary structures and it's called Lagrangian structures on mapping stacks and semi-classical TQFTs. So if you look at this paper, they'll tell you what the non-degeneracy condition is. Okay, so now like what's something now that I can do with this? So what have I done? Sorry? So this is a structure on the domain of my cobordisms, and it allows me to produce a Lagrangian structure on the mapping stack, like by doing, like when I do restriction. So the thing that I was trying to prove, right, is that I could actually build, I can build a semi, so the theorem that we've now like gone through all the things that are necessary to prove, which is this theorem of Kluck, Hogsang, and Schienbauer, is that for an AKSZ theory, taking equations of motion upgrades to a functor from the category of n, from the n category of cobordisms to the category of like n-shifted Lagrangian correspondences. And so one thing that I needed in order to show that that was true is I needed to know that if I had like an inclusion of like a boundary into a manifold, then that when I look at the restriction map on the equations of motion, that is actually going to be a Lagrangian, because that would be one example, because this is one example of a cobordism, and this would be the corresponding Lagrangian correspondence. And basically the technical thing that lets you do this, which again it's not due to me in any sort of way, is that you need to show that this thing has a relative deorientation. Does that answer the question? So, I mean, So let me like give you like the standard example. So I claimed that I wanted to show that this thing had some kind of a boundary structure. And so the boundary structure on this particular example is that inside of the relative chains of dimension D on M, you have a fundamental class that maps via the the boundary to the d minus 1 chains on m, or on the boundary. And it takes m to boundary of m. And this thing is the orientation of boundary of m. And the relative orientation of m with respect to the boundary of m is this this particular class. And then basically the fact that this hits that is this homotopy that I was asking for here. So basically so what it is that, you know, when you if you say that I'm going to define a field theory on oriented cobordisms, you have to choose orientations on all your cobordisms. And that's like what this is. Does that answer? Basically, I would claim it's like background structure on all of the cobordisms. No, I mean I understand. It's a confusing thing. So let me see. I've got like what, 12 minutes? Is that right? Or negative 12 minutes? I don't know how much I have. 12 minutes. Okay. All right. So let me use this now to just produce some other random things in TQFT. And then I'll say a tiny bit about the geometric quantization functor. But fortunately, the geometric quantization functor is only somewhat a mathematical object anyway. It's mostly an ansatz. So that means I don't actually have to say that much technical about it. Like if it's just an ansatz, then, or if it's mostly an ansatz, then I can be very vague. Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is that now my space of n cobordisms, I need to choose, like when I define my category of oriented n cobordisms, I should have chose a fundamental class on every single one. No, the equations of motion are the mapping set. Right. That's like so in these AKSZ theories, the equations of motion like are the mapping set. So basically, like what you should think of, like if you're like more used to like physics, is that maybe like I looked at the space of all C infinity maps from say M to Y. And that's like, you know, like some huge sort of space. And then like on there's like an action functional for me whose critical locus picks out the constant maps. And basically the result of like taking that critical locus is some minus one shifted symplectic thing. And basically I'm saying that this is a minus one shifted symplectic thing, which is exactly constant maps, or the minus one shifted cotangent bundle to constant maps. And so like this thing is actually the solutions to the equations of motion, and like the residue of the action functional, like on like this space is the symplectic structure. This is the solutions to the equation of motion of the sigma. So these spaces that I'm writing down here, that's why I'm calling them EOM, or that's why I'm calling them equations of motion. So they're, yeah, so basically these things like sit inside of something bigger, like as, and they're equal to the critical locus of the action. But somehow, like in these AKSE examples, you can just turn, rather than talking about it, some infinite dimensional, smooth manifold and having to do that, you can just hope that you could get everything that you could get out of that strictly out of just remembering the equations of motion with the symplectic structure. So this is a little bit complicated. Anyway, and so what we're going to do in a minute is I'll talk about how to go from these to n categories. And again, this thing is mostly an ansatz, it's not really mathematically, it's only partially mathematically well-defined. That's not a real, maybe I'll draw with like a squiggly. Arrow. Okay, but let me actually just do a couple of things. with all this, all these like things that I've defined. So suppose that I want to study boundary conditions for in an AKSC theory. So the first question is like, what kind of an object is a boundary condition mathematically? Like, or a semi-classical boundary condition. And I think that Kevin has basically said this, but now I can maybe shed a little bit more light on this definition. So let's suppose that I have a manifold M with boundary of M. And what we've shown is that the equations of motion for the boundary of M let's say that this one is the one of dimension D and that it's compact and oriented. So we've said that this one is N minus D shifted symplectic. And then now one can try and study the equations of motion on M, and we've proven that this thing is a Lagrangian. Like that's what all this stuff about the Lagrangian structures proved. I'm just rewriting that. I didn't want it down below. So I have this Lagrangian. And our definition is that a boundary condition for our theory on the boundary of M, well, it ought to be whatever I need in order to make to get a well-defined field theory on this manifold M. And one way that you could do that is that a boundary condition could just be a Lagrangian. Our definition of a boundary condition is that it's just going to be a Lagrangian in the space of in the solutions to the equations of motion on the boundary. And then, we proved a theorem earlier that if I have two different Lagrangians and I intersect them, like that would actually be a shifted symplectic thing. So this intersection, this thing is now N minus D plus one shifted symplectic. And that's like that's the dimension of that I would have gotten if M had been compact without boundary. So like this thing, this B was exactly enough to make this thing be the right kind of object, like that a field theory would assign to a manifold of dimension, like of dimension D that was closed. So that's kind of the reason that we expect that this Lagrangian like is like a good definition of boundary condition. And if you think about like what this is just the space of fields, solutions to the equations of motion on M, so when I strict them the boundary, like they lie in B. And this kind of matches, I guess, the other intuition that you have in symplectic geometry, that boundary conditions for like J holomorphic curves are Lagrangians. And this is just some fancy, this is just telling you that this is just some general thing. That boundary condition equals Lagrangian. Okay, so that's one thing that now we can say kind of precisely with everything that we've done. Let me just do one kind of an example. Of something you can do with this. Sorry, this. These arrows are not Lagrange. So this arrow here is just the, so this is the, sorry, I wrote this here, but people might not be familiar. So this means fiber product or intersection. So this space here is by definition, the equations of motion on the boundary of M intersected with B, or sorry, on M intersected with B inside of the space of equations of motion for the boundary of M. Sorry? Correct. So this map is Lagrangian. That one was Lagrangian by the theorem we proved earlier. So then this thing is symplectic, and I don't know anything about these maps. Yeah, there's no reason, because because the targets of those maps are Lagrangians, right? So like, I don't know what it means to have a Lagrangian and a Lagrangian. Right, this thing is a Lagrangian, and then like you'd be asking me, is this thing a Lagrangian and that Lagrangian? Yeah, so it's not necessarily a meaningful question, although actually, if you look in some papers of Pavel Safronov, these things are Poisson, and like you actually can make sense of something, but I don't want to talk about it. So basically, at first glance, it looks like it wasn't, that it didn't make sense, but actually, if you look at it harder, there actually is an answer like what you want. If you look in a paper of Pavel Safronov on like Poisson structures and coisotropic structures. Okay, so that's, let me just do one last thing then. Do I have even 1 minute? Okay. That's good. Yeah, that's good. Let's do questions. Yeah, so sorry, the next one won't be so formal.